eventually, when you start thinking about what are human problems to solve, you naturally get toward product, you get toward innovation, and you just start thinking about how can we solve problems in new ways? And so over the last year, really dug deep into AI and figured out all of the different spaces where AI could really drive growth.
This is Bridging the Gap with your host, Matt Reiner.
Sarah Woodward, welcome to Bridging the Gap. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me, Matt.
We didn't even plan this. It just goes to show that plans are meant to be messed up because this was not planned and it turned out to be perfect. Where you launched a new business. We're going to talk about that today. So congratulations on that. We'll dive into it in a second, but that's exciting. So this is going to be a fun conversation. We're going to talk all about AI. We're going to dive deep into it more on the utilization of it, how to make it create efficiencies. What are the value props? How do we intertwine it to our business? How do we leverage it? How do we stay on top of it? There's so much moving parts of AI in this realm. And I know some people may be tired of talking about it, but this is going to be hopefully a different perspective. And we'll go with it from the growth ops spot. So before we dive into that, tell me a little bit about you. What did the 13-year-old Sarah Woodward want to be when she grew up?
So 13-year-old Sarah wanted to be a fashion designer. The funny thing is I actually did apprentice with a Russian designer here in Atlanta. That was probably about 25 years ago. But yeah, I had all this creativity and didn't quite know what to do with it.
Fashion designer. So do you still find yourself drawn to fashion design elements and stuff that you learned 25 years ago, but I know, maybe not on a professional level, but on a, are you still focused on that to some extent?
I mean, the thing is I really still love the feel of really nice fabric. I notice the cut of different pieces of clothing. I do like to wear clothes. However, I'm also just like a good old t-shirt and jeans kind of gal as well. But fashion is yet another kind of art.
I love that. And I mean, it speaks volumes to your career as well, right? Creativity, artistic ability, innovation, it kind of aligns. And it's a good precursor to highlighting where you've gone with your career. But tell us a little bit about that journey from 13-year-old fashion designer Sarah Woodward to now entrepreneur of AI growth ops and a company that's serving companies to help them become more efficient using AI and innovation.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. I started off my career in marketing, like I think a lot of people who get into innovation eventually. But yeah, what I realized is that I loved storytelling and I loved thinking about messaging and I loved thinking about customers. And so early in my career, I wasn't really developed with the perspective of human-centered, marketing or human-centered design or any of these things. It was just more traditional product and marketing. But I really got exposed to customer journeys. And so really started to understand how do people make decisions about what they buy or what they do or, these things. Which, of course, eventually, when you start thinking about what are human problems to solve, you naturally eventually get toward product, you get toward innovation, and you just start thinking about how can we solve problems in new ways? So during COVID, like many people, I think, all reevaluating what we want out of our lives, what we want out of our careers, I was tired of just consulting and I really wanted to start building and making an impact. And so over the last year, really dug deep into AI and figured out all of the different spaces where AI could really drive growth. And so to your point earlier about a lot of people are tired of some of the conversation, I'm not really here to talk about what is the meaning of humanity and partnering with AI. We've got to make smart choices, especially around data and bias and privacy and all that. But I'm really focused on how do we leverage this really cool tool to do really cool stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a matter of kind of putting the philosophical pessimistic view aside and saying that the reality is that this is here and it's a little bit bigger than anybody can, one person or even a group of people can stop. And so it's now a matter of saying, how do we use it? How do we use it? Because humanity and bettering humanity is that we need more humans to help with that. And maybe AI can give us more time to do more of that, right? There's another perspective to see. The optimistic views always tended to be a little bit less of a utopia type world. And pessimism is always like, well, here's action. And so it always gets more favor. But there is a lot of opportunity with AI. And I want to dive into that. But before we do, I want to just make sure that we bring all of us, listeners and everybody that's tuning in or watching, on the same page. Let's start with just something simple to level set, and then we're going to dive deeper. Just start by giving a layman's explanation of generative AI and what it is and maybe where it's evolved from. But let's all be on the same page as we then go dive deeper into the use cases and everything of that nature.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've actually been in the AI space for about 10 years, working with R&D teams and client companies, really thinking about how do things like machine learning and how does computer vision play a role in building products that scale across an enterprise to do X thing, right? And so artificial intelligence in that respect is teaching a model how to make a decision, right? And it's programmed to make that decision. And we build models and algorithms to do those things. So they have a specific purpose. And prior to now, all these things have only really been accessed through developers or data scientists or data engineers who really understand how to code, how to build models, how to extract data, how to read the data, right? Well, now we're in a different place with generative. And so generating something new, what these models are now doing is through natural language processing, spoken word or written word or typed word, we no longer need computer languages to talk to AI. And so there's this kind of convergence of two things. One is AI is starting to create something new, and it's now accessible to all of us who know how to use communications. Mm-hmm. And so it's really changing everything. And I think that one of the things that a lot of people don't think about is access to new jobs for people who may not have had, say, all these white collar skills in the back, in their time. It might actually give them more access to understanding, like, what goes into an office job or something like that. So I think that there's a lot of things that we don't actually consider because we don't know all the possibilities.
So, if I were to kind of summarize it, tell me if I'm off base here, is basically pre-generative AI, and let's just use ChatGPT, OpenAI's ChatGPT as kind of the baseline for generative AI, right? Because that's when everybody started to realize that they can just type and solve. Pre-generative AI, you had to have coders with data science and also data scientists or a coder with a data science background to code something and tell it what to do. And then it could go and utilizing that learnings, it could go and do. It could go and be a doer. It could go be a doer. So like a worker bee, but you had to do a ton of coding. There was some types of simple tools, but it was very hard. It's like kind of if this happens, then do this. If this, and this happen, and it could be on massive amounts of data.
Absolutely.
Now what we've done is, so it went from being a doer pre-OpenAI and ChatGPT to now being a creator. Now having basically a mind of its own saying, interpret what I'm saying and come back and think of a way to respond, execute, et cetera, in your own words. Is that a fair way of saying it?
I'll say almost.
Okay.
And
B's and C's get degrees. That's how I got through college.
100%. So if we think about creating something new, yes, it can, because it can make really, really smart, educated guesses on what comes next. So obviously we're looking at words here when you're looking at ChatGPT. And so you're getting some sort of response back that it has basically rapidly guessed what's the new word in the chain of words based on the context it's been given and based on how it has been taught to learn and then make decisions. So it is not just imagining new decisions to make, it's making those choices because we've programmed it to make those choices.
So generative AI still needs the computer programmer data scientist to build, but they've now have the tools that allow it to be accessible in a more natural language way prior to what it used to be. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, I think so, for sure. Yeah, someone's got to build an LLM and train it. And, you know, those things are still not, you know, we're not doing that in a chat window necessarily.
Not yet. So an LLM being a large language learning model that's basically interpreting all of these words, et cetera. And so, you know, it reminds me of the evolution of email, right? You know, it seems so simple to us, but the behind the scenes of email, there's a lot of development. There's a lot of challenges that had to be solved by a developer, and the same thing's happening with generative AI. Okay, so we understand how it's evolved. Now it's accessible. It's now applicable to more people. It's accessible to more people. I mean, the cost is basically free, so that's why we're starting to see it more ramped up, because more people can talk about it other than people just inside of the computer science and computer science world. Right. So here's the question. There's a lot of headlines out there, and it makes it feel or seem that AI just solves all these problems, that I can just go get an AI agent, I can just go start using AI, and everything's solved. But what, you know, these bigger companies are using AI, there's a lot that goes into preparing your business to be able to leverage the benefit of AI. And so I'm curious, like, what are some of those challenges that companies run into that are roadblocks or pit stops or whatever you want to call it, to them gaining full advantage of AI that may not be perceived from the novice or the beginner's, just kind of the viewer's eyes?
For sure. So on the tech and data side of things, you know, they may not have a lot of access to clean or reliable data. For instance, they have CRMs, but there hasn't really been process or consistency in how they update information, create records, et cetera. Or even in your tech stack, maybe this team over here uses these tools and this team over here uses these tools. Or there just haven't been standardized processes over the whole company. You know, and so if you have all of these different kind of silos, it's harder to bring a whole company together, especially when you have to think about governance and compliance. So you're having to, like, okay, what's this team over here doing? What's this team over here doing? Instead of creating a few standardized processes that can be easily implemented and have safeguards built into that. Now, one of the things that is also challenging, however, is culture. You know, so has there been a culture where in the past people are allowed to play with new software? You know, are they allowed to make decisions about their workflows? Are they allowed to say, hey, I'm not comfortable using this, you know, yet, and I need some training? What is, you know, what's been the way that leadership has rolled out programs or out, you know, digital transformation or whatever? So I think that, you know, it's kind of like, what's your stack, what's your data, and what's that culture of learning that you've, you know, kind of built and developed into your organization?
You know, you mentioned something there that I think is super important for people to hear, and it's about data. And I think that that's the biggest thing about AI that is looked over, because AI doesn't solve your data mess. It can't solve your data mess because we haven't figured out how to have AI think for us. So they can interpret the data, but it's basically the garbage in, garbage out situation. Right. Like, you are throwing garbage in. And so you think about CRM data, you think about performance data, you think about notes data, you talked about standardization and organization. If you don't have processes and standardization for everybody to follow it the same way, then you're not going to get the full benefit out of it, which then says, and this is, I think, a challenge that we've seen within a lot of technologies, is that we think that if we just buy it, it's just going to do everything that we were shown in the demo right away.
Yeah.
And that's just not the nature of it, especially with AI. And you have to have clean data. Even though it says unstructured data, you still need it to be structured in some form to be able to read it. So I think that that's false advertising. So
right.
how does a firm, you know, call it a small firm, mid-sized firm, you know, that wants to start leveraging AI, how do you start cleaning the data? Where do you even start from? What does clean data mean? Like, what does organized data mean? Do I have to have, like, all my PDFs in one folder and my Word docs in another? Like, what does this look like?
Yeah. So I think, first of all, it depends on what are you trying to accomplish. So if you're trying to look at your past customer behavior history, you know, and what are their buying cycles? What are their buying decisions? Do they cross-sell, upsell services, et cetera? You need to have great CRM data and you need to have great account management data. So like, what did the life cycle of that relationship look like? And so someone has had to have tracked all those things, right? But like, what if you are really looking to operationalize something else that's something like maybe content or something like that? Honestly, having as much data is not as critical unless you're actually trying to automate outreach. And then you do need your CRM data to be, you know, or at least your mailing lists to be in really great shape. Hopefully you're starting to track that full funnel of, you know, sales activities, marketing, performance activities, so that you can see some of these things. But oftentimes these data sets are in a lot of different places. And so once you think about like, okay, what's my goal? What is the type of data that I need to have in order to get to that goal? Can we start with looking at that piece and then build off of it? Because you can't go back and say, hey, we're a 15-year-old company and we're going to scrape our entire 15 years of Salesforce history. You know, it's just too hard. So you've got to start somewhere.
Yeah, I think that the idea of having a goal and not trying to accomplish too much, like, you know, it's taking small bite size. But, you know, as you were talking, it kind of just dawned on me, you know, you're closer to this than I am. Are you fearful that there's going to be this divide in, you know, a further divide where the big companies are going to stand poised to benefit while the small companies can't? Because it just seems like a lot of work to create the appropriate data sets to get the full utilization of AI. Is that going to become the inhibitor from small companies to benefit?
I think yes and no. I do think that AI and some automation processes can level the playing field quite a bit. I will say that, you know, a small company, you know, like some sort of professional services firm or advisory firm, for instance, where you might be smaller and, you know, not looking at all the data in the world from maybe investment standpoint, but from your own customer set, it's not the same mass amounts of data that, you know, a Fortune 500 CPG company is looking at, for instance. And so I think we have different scenarios and different needs. But yes, I also feel like smaller companies always, you know, have to make the decisions about where they invest their money. And so often they're probably making payroll decisions or they're making, you know, what's our next offer decision. They're not necessarily making the decisions like I can go invest in this massive tech stack around data. So I think that's one of the reasons I'm kind of shifting my focus with AI growth ops is to focus on founders and small companies that need to do the same things that these big companies do, but, you know, they can't afford the overhead of some of the bigger shops.
Yeah. And I think that it also gets into putting in controls and processes and limiting, you know, within like a CRM, for instance, right? I think about the wealth management business and, you know, within your CRM, as opposed to giving full freedom to choose and write in fields, whatever you want, you put controls on that. So they have selections and that then starts to create standardized data. And maybe you find a point in time and you cut off and say, from this time going forward, we'll build my data set. And from this time backwards, I'm just going to say it's done. And maybe over time, I'll add it in. But you try not to eat too much. Now, so we're talking about this. And like AI is still, as much as knowledge is out there and how many tools are coming out every day and like the publicity of it, AI is still really like a blank slate. It's like a blank canvas right now. You have choices. And we're talking about data sets. We're talking about cleanliness and processes and procedures, et cetera. And you mentioned setting a goal. But if I'm a company that's coming in and say, you know what, I have an open mind. I'm willing to go anywhere. I understand the value of AI and I understand the efficiencies it can bring. And I want to start gaining the benefits of it. Mm-hmm. Where do I start? Yeah. Where do I start?
I always say, what's your biggest pain point? So is it sales? Is it marketing? Is it customer experience? Is it product? Where is that big mess that you kind of need to address first? You know, like anything, I think you start small and build off of that. So if you have one small area that needs attention, you know, maybe it is standardizing call center communications. Like this is a, you know, random example, but you know, we have very different customer service experiences across the company, you know, because there's no standardization. So how do we maybe start there and ensure that that first touch of customer brand interaction when they're coming to us with a problem is positive? And we've made sure that everyone has the same messaging, the same tool set, the same abilities to reach out and really solve problems. So I'll say sales and marketing is right now the two biggest use cases. Content production optimization is the absolute biggest, you know, use case right now. And a lot of reasons for this. First of all, the risk is really low. You know, you're talking about if you have teams and you're letting them use a thing like ChatGPT, putting in some of your brand messaging is not going to compromise IP or your customer data sets or anything like that, right? And so marketing tends to be one of those areas. And it's also because marketing teams really enjoy embracing new MarTech. So they're really, you know, apt to try new tools and, you know, and see the value quickly. I think that there are definitely a lot of industries where we have to tread a little bit more carefully, especially in regulated ones. I know you would know this, but you cannot have a generative AI chatbot give any financial information whatsoever. So how do you make sure you're not, that can't happen? Well, you can't use generative AI for that because it might start spouting financial information or recommendations, and that could be detrimental to a business.
I love the idea of identifying your pain point.
Yeah. Right?
Identify, there is so much that it can do. You know, I always liken this to Michael Kitsis has the fintech landscape map for wealth managers. And it's basically gotten from like 40 companies to now it's like, I don't know, 500 or 600 companies, it feels like. It's just huge. And everybody gets overwhelmed by it because they go and they're like, I don't know how to keep up with all this. I don't know how to choose which one I want. And I always say, don't go looking at the map without, like, it's like, that means that you're like going to the grocery store hungry. Yeah, you're going to want to go and dabble in everything. You're going to buy everything that you think you're needed, but you're never going to need any of it. But I always say, go and find what your pain point is. Like, hey, I need document management. I need a new CRM. I need a new trading and rebalance. And then go look at there and then go analyze those. So when it comes to AI, so much is changing so fast. There's so much out there. How do firms that say, all right, I've identified my pain point. I've identified areas that I need to improve from a process standpoint to make sure the data is better. Now I'm ready to dabble.
Okay.
Where do I go? How do I go about finding, staying up to date? Because everything is changing so quickly inside the AI world these days.
Yeah, I agree. There are a lot of great thought leaders who are putting out, you know, really good content. But honestly, I think when you are looking to especially create operational efficiencies, going to, you know, some of those platforms where they're putting out content around how you build workflow automation, for instance, you know, checking some of those things out. What I'll say is always look at your existing tech stack first, because they are integrating new AI tools and features all the time. So there is no need for you to look outside of that if, for instance, you have master service level agreements where you're tied into some sort of infrastructure. Go try those tools first and see if you can get the value out of them, right? And other, if you need to supplement some of those tools, what I say is just try some without going toward like huge enterprise level agreements, because you may find that the tool of the moment doesn't actually work for your team. And so taking a kind of lean startup approach of build a proof of concept, test that proof of concept, see if it is going to provide your team with value, and then start to think about what other investments do we need to make to, in order to scale this value.
Yeah, I love that. Start small, and you'll also gain the trust of your team doing that more often, because you won't be putting them through the ringer to, there's multiple failures that come along the way. I want to try something here, because you've consulted so many companies, you understand AI, you understand how to create efficient processes leveraging technology. I want to provide a process that happens within wealth management, and I'd love to dissect it, and we can answer questions, we can dive into it. I'll set up a scenario, but I'd love to dissect it and see how a firm that's doing it this way, how I describe it, can maybe think about using AI and efficiencies to better create that process. So let's just talk about the review, like a current client review meeting. Let's talk about that process, right? And this isn't for everybody. It's just like, I'm just trying to take a standard one, right? So you have your CRM, you have an upcoming meeting deliverable. So then a team member, usually on the operations team, reaches out, schedules the meeting. Some people use Calendly, they send it through email, et cetera. And then the client schedules the meeting. And then about, a couple of days before, a week before, the team prepares for that meeting, pulling notes from past meetings, pulling the financial plan, reviewing the financial plan, thinking about talking points, reviewing the estate plan, the tax plan, et cetera. There's like a checklist that they go through. Right. They check beneficiaries, they check performance, they check asset allocation. And then they go into the meeting and they present this and they talk through it with the client. And they have action items for the client to do to execute on the plan. They have action items for them. They have all these notes. They go back, they type them into the CRM, they put the tasks in, and then they go and execute. So let's start with that process, right? I know that everybody does it a little bit differently, but from a high level, that kind of gives a process. Let's dissect that. How can we make that process more efficient using AI?
Yeah. So there are so many touch points in there real quick. And, and I'll even touch a little bit on just using automation in general between things. But if you think about your action items, your tasks, and your CRM, those are all pieces of data that can easily be connected to each other, right? And so, and I think about any time, I've built flows where it's like, okay, I have a new client call or one of these upcoming client review sessions, right? I know it's going to happen. And so there's a trigger for automating that scheduling to connect two calendars together. So humans don't actually have to do it if we've set this thing up right. Or you can, but I've typically automated that. And then you think about like all these call notes, right? Or all these team notes or meeting notes that you've had leading up to the preparation of this meeting. So when I typically always use some sort of AI transcription service, I really like fireflies.ai, Otter is another one, but they do really great transcriptions of your calls. And so you can customize the summary reports to pull out certain things that you are really concerned with for informing the next action or informing the next meeting. So whether or not it's next steps, whether or not it's specific problems they need solved or things that they need addressed or specific services you're going to offer, those call notes, you can feed that into what I call, like in my case, I call it a scoping document and I have a scoping process, but you guys probably have like whatever that deliverable is, maybe it's the plan, but you have an approach for building these plans internally. And so if we teach AI to understand that approach, we can actually have the call notes filtered into that approach filter and you get a first draft kind of deliverable, project plan that then you can start building out more and reacting to depending on how many fields you're filling out and whatnot. So like, even though you're not going to take out the advisor because the advisor is the one who actually knows what's going on and can also like cry bullshit on some things, if AI has messed it up or, misconstrued some things. So I build into my processes a ton of breaks where you have to have a human interaction and say maybe even you change a true false statement in a spreadsheet that triggers the next action. And so like even you're talking about logging tasks, nobody should ever have to log tasks at all at this point in a project management tool. AI can do that for us. And it can also schedule the next thing if we have to come together once that task has been completed.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I want to touch on a few of those points, right? So if we start from the beginning, it's a matter of automating the meeting scheduling. Like is there an opportunity for clients to link up their calendar to my calendar? And there's not even a correspondence. It's just like, hey, it's gone on the calendar. Like, that's super interesting. There's a lot of people probably like, I bet you they cringed. it's a little bit, it's like, ooh, that's a little bit like overstepping my boundaries. Yeah. And it's not white glove enough, but maybe that is an efficiency that our clients really like and really want. Maybe it's not. Maybe you give that option. But, you know, it's the automation and of sending out that Calendly link based on the task being due in your CRM. Tools like Zapier or Pipedrive, I think, or Pipe, I forget the Pipedream or whatever it may be.
Yeah, exactly.
Connect and can do that. But then the idea of using like a transcription service. Now, again, people probably cringe. It's a little bit different for our industry because of the compliance aspect. But remember, a lot of these tools have gone through a lot of compliance and they work with highly compliant industries. A lot of doctors use transcription services now. You know, I've had Corey Westfall of Mobile Assistant on multiple times and I love what they're doing. And they have a transcription service. But if you don't want to use something like that, you can use like an Otter or Fireflies for Zoom meetings or even in person, you can transcript it. But the idea of the next step, right? Nobody wants to go and read a full-on transcript, but you can feed that transcript through an AI engine that then is trained on the formula to ask questions. What was the most talked about point? What were the outcomes? What were the tasks? What were the objectives covered? And you can train that engine. ChatGPT allows you to do that now. It can basically ask questions based on that transcript and then provide you a deliverable that then you can then either send over to your CRM, send over to an ops assistant, or to an investment associate that can review it, make sure that there's a human element. And what this is doing is it's just eliminating that menial stuff so that humans can do what we do best, which is helping to interpret the data, helping to interpret the human, helping to direct the conversation, and then automating all the rest of his stuff. And like you said, connecting that AI engine to a CRM. That's super interesting. Now, to get that done, you got to have some processes. You got to have some clean data. You have to have all that. But that is a one way of doing it, which is super interesting.
For sure, for sure. And like things like Otter and Fireflies, you don't even have to push out to a ChatGPT. It already, like they are their own AI, right? And so they have already done some of that for you. One thing people need to think about is regardless of whether you're recording or you are using an AI assistant or whatever, if you are using Zoom, Zoom has already said in your license agreement, they are training their AI using your call transcripts, even if you're not recording. So we have all sort of authorized some of these programs to do things that we might not be aware of.
You may have just spurred a lot of phone calls to Zoom for a lot of people listening to this because they're going to go check to see if that's the case for them. But I mean, these companies, they own the data. Everybody wants to own the data. This is why data is so valuable is for situations very like nice. This. So that I appreciate you going through that with me. That was fun. It's a good exercise to see kind of how to think about it. You got to think from start to end, where are all the connection points? What are the action items? And then where are the opportunity? Not everything's going to have an opportunity. And you've got, I think where I've seen, you know, struggles before, even with us is, you know, you try to automate something that you really want to automate, but it's just not ready to be automated yet. Yeah. And that ruins it. So you've got to be cognizant and say, hey, I'm going to shelve this, but I'm going to automate this and try to find that low hanging fruit.
Well, and even think about the baby steps within that workflow. Like I want to automate this whole thing. Well, I can't because of this breaking point here and here. Okay. Well, automate those other three areas. You know, you can still get value even if you can't do an end-to-end automation.
Yep. It's not an all or nothing. I agree 100% with that. I want to dive into one other thing before we close this out and let you get back to building your business is I know that you've consulted and worked with a lot of large organizations, you know, Home Depot, Coca-Cola, the likes. These are companies that are super innovative inside of a large infrastructure. They have a large infrastructure. Now, they have budget. They're always thinking forward thinking. They're trying to find the next thing. They're not sitting on their laurels or resting on their laurels. What have you learned from working with those companies on how those types of companies like Coke, let's just use Coke and Home Depot specifically, given that we're in Atlanta and Atlanta brands, but how do they keep their teams and ensure that they are always staying innovative and that they're staying forward thinking? What are the underlying processes and mentality and infrastructure and, you know, outside of just spending money?
Right.
What have you learned from them that we can distill? Because I'm a huge fan of saying, hey, let's look outside of our walls, outside of our industry at how others are doing it, big and small. Right. And let's learn something from them. And so what does Coke and Home Depot do well when it comes to staying innovative?
I think I think that they market their innovation story really, really well. You know, the truth is these big companies have a terrible time innovating, and it's not specific specific Home Depot. Have moments of like incredible innovation? Absolutely. But if you think about continuous innovation, I think what we see is that the core business is always going to get the attention. And so when you are looking at new domains, you know, outside of the people you serve today, or maybe it's just new product spaces with the same people you serve today, those don't ever get get the investment that they often deserve because there's so much focus on the core business. Also, because of that focus on the core business and because they're really good at building that core business, they apply the same rigor and the same expectations of what success criteria look like to innovation. And that's not actually the way innovation should be measured. And you also do not want to encumber innovation with, say, enterprise level software agreements. So if you're trying to spin up a small new venture and really wanting to test the market, see if there's a market there, find product market fit, like you don't want to be really encumbered by 1 year Salesforce marketing cloud, you know, integration. Like you might want to just throw up something scrappy, you know? And so I just think that there's not this mindset about I need to be a startup founder inside a big company and think like a startup and like allow failure to happen so that we get to success faster.
The idea of the focus on the core business, that it's put on the same expectations and through the same rigor and judged by the same KPIs as the core businesses.
Yes.
I see that all the time. And so then I guess the follow-up question to that is, how have you seen companies that are good at innovation? Maybe you can name the companies if you'd want that are really good. How have they overcome that? Because when I think about that answer, I always think that if a large company like Coca-Cola is unable to have at least a small division focus on new ideas, given that that core business is likely going to sustain because of how big it already is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, small businesses, like, you know, they have the allocation of capital decisions, and it's going to be hard to focus on anything outside of the core business. So at any stage of your business cycle life, you're going to always be focused on the core business, and you're always going to say and judge everything relative to that core business. And so for a company that wants to innovate, how do you overcome that based on what you've seen some companies that have done it really, really well?
Mm-hmm. I think part of it is really having rigor around learning plans and what are you going into market to learn? Is it, you know, that you're looking to learn if there is a customer segment? Or are you looking to learn if there's a product need? Or are you looking to learn if this is a scalable business? You know, so we're like really hitting on all the abilities there. And really putting, I think, you know, first of all, you have to have buy-in from the top that we need multiple lines in the water to figure out what our relevancy looks like in 10 to 15 to 20 years, right? Just because we're a leader in this space right now doesn't mean that we will be a leader in this space in 20 years when disrupted by other things. You know, have worked with several organizations that I think have done innovation well. And I've seen them build things, you know, as part of a new venture or like a new innovation pod or whatever that eventually get pulled into the core business, you know. And so those innovations have been successful, like a nationwide insurance, for instance, or worked with a lot of banks over time, you know, just to put out new consumer products that solve a problem in a slightly different way. And so I think that honestly, and it's also about keeping the customer inside of the focus and continually micro testing all along the way to making sure you're actually solving value, because that's the thing that people will buy is if you're doing something that is so necessary to their everyday.
I love the idea of having this mentality from the top. It definitely does start from the top. And the top needs to understand that it's two different verticals and they should be viewed differently.
Yeah.
And that you need multiple lines in the water to understand where you are 5, 10, 15 years. So you're not reactionary. You're proactive in that nature. And you look at a lot of these big companies that have done it. You know, I think about Philips, for instance, was all around lighting. And now, like, they're into healthcare tech. Like, two drastically different. And to your point of what you said, what made me remember that was, when you're like, well, what you are today may not be what you are in 10 to 15 years, and you've got to be ready to transition. They were lighting. Now they're healthcare tech.
Like, right.
Drastically different things. And that was their business. And now this is their business. And the reason they were able to do that, well, a lot of things probably that are underneath it, but they had this idea and acceptance of saying, we may not be who we are today in the future. And we've got to figure out that now. So because of how long it takes to make that transition go forward.
Yeah.
It's so hard.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Sarah, this has been amazing. I mean, I could talk about this stuff all day, every day. It's super interesting. I love your perspective on it. I think that you've got such great insight and experience. So I appreciate the time. Before I let you go, I want to ask two questions I ask all my guests before they leave. But first is, I love learning through books. And so I like to ask my guests what books are best ones to read. What's one book out there you think that everybody should read, whether it's on the topic of AI or not? What is one of those books that you think that everybody should read or reread out there today?
Yeah. So for any of us who are in, you know, in professional services working with clients, I say this, the Workshop Survival Guidebook. This is how to design and teach workshops that work every time. And so that's not necessarily like I have to just design workshops, but think about every client call you're on. What's the experience you want to create for them? How do you facilitate really great conversations? So that one has changed a lot of the way I think about designing client experiences. So I love that one. Sorry, I had to crawl under my couch to get it.
I love it. I love it. I saw you post that on LinkedIn and I actually went out and bought it. It's on the bookshelf in my ready to read area. So I'm looking forward to reading that one.
It's so good.
Second question is, we talked about a lot and there's probably a lot that we didn't talk about that maybe you did want to talk about, but what is one piece of actionable advice our listeners can walk away from this conversation that you hope that they can walk away from this conversation with that they can implement today, tomorrow to better themselves, their business, whatever it may be? What's one piece of actionable advice for them?
Yeah, absolutely. Get out and start playing with some tools and just see what AI can do within your own workflow. So if you have played with it at all, you know, you've started to see, okay, it can do some things, but maybe it's not like the be-all and all answer to everything. Well, figure out why and start just being able to kind of analytically pick apart why ChatGPT responses are terrible. That will start to help you figure out how you make them good, right? So just keep practicing so you know how to talk to the engine. The next thing I will say is keep it simple. Like, I am not a designer. So even in a year and a half of playing with AI tools, Midjourney is still not my thing. I'm not doing pretty pictures. Like, I'm a writer and I'm a business person. So like, I like process, you know? So figure out what is going to work for you and forget about what other people are saying. Like, if you're listening to this, you're already ahead. Like, 90% of industries are way behind in quotes. This is a journey and we're at the start of it. So there's no time like the present. Just figure out what it can do for you. And if you think there's a problem that could solve it, there probably is. And let's figure it out.
It certainly is a skill, and skills take practice, take time in it. And you can theorize, you can read, but there's no better learning than doing. And so I think that's such great advice. Well, Sarah, like I said, this was an incredible conversation. I really do appreciate your time. I'm motivated. I'm inspired. I can't wait to follow your journey. I know that others will want to continue to follow your journey as well. So what's the best way for people to continue to follow you, to get in touch with you, and maybe even potentially work with you in your new endeavor?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find me at AIGrowthOps.com. You can also find me on LinkedIn as Sarah Woodward. I am the LinkedIn.whatever Sarah Woodward. So I'm easy to find. And yeah, I post stuff all the time because I want to get people curious and I want to show people what is possible because a lot of people don't know what's possible. So follow along. I am not going to, you know, share all the legislation and stuff like that. I'm just showing practical tips.
I love it. It's a good follow. She's in my feed. We've been connected for a while, so it's definitely worth the follow. Sarah Woodward, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much. Be well, stay well, and we will talk with you again soon.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of Bridging the Gap. Don't forget to give us a rating and let us know what you think.